Lalo Schifrin. I'm the composer of the music for Rush Hour. The title is a theme that comes in different ways, the theme of Rush Hour, the theme of tension, of adventure. Brett Ratner called me to do this movie. I must say that Brett has been a fan of mine, and one of his favorite scores is the one I did, Enter the Dragon, in the 70s with Bruce Lee. As a matter of fact, when I called, every time I had to call Brett Ratner for any reason, in his answering machine, he had the music, the main title of Enter the Dragon. So he said to me, if Enter the Dragon had the beat of the 70s, it should be the Enter the Dragon of the new millennium. And I made a electroacoustic score this time, not only using exotic instruments and also a full orchestra, big orchestra, but also I pre-recorded in many, many cases with an assistant who is a programmer. And we either had samples or we created sounds that had to be synchronized with a live orchestra. That's technically is a difficult task, but it's not insurmountable because when we went to the studio, everything worked all right. We had the orchestra and everything that was pre-recorded, it was there. Then, after we finished the recording, I had to mix the electronic elements with the live orchestra. But that was easy because it was already synchronized. We didn't have any problem of any kind. It's a very tender theme that I wrote for her, and the relationship between her and Jackie Chan, which he feels very tender to her. And as we are going to see later in the movie, she becomes a very important character in the movie. I'll use this theme in different ways.
I was in the diner. You weren't in the diner.
I said in the back of the... It don't even matter, man. I'm late, you late, it don't matter, man. Come on, let's do this. Put that gun away, man. How many people you done killed this year? Stop it, man. Come on, let's do it. Come on. Come on. Come on, man.
Don't be late again.
I ain't gonna be late. Come on. What we got? Ooh, that's tight. That's beautiful.
This cue is basically the introduction of the other character in the movie that is one of the leading roles, Chris Tucker, who we don't know at this point that he's an undercover policeman for the Los Angeles Police Department. I didn't record the whole cue in one piece. I recorded first the first half, or the first part, they say, during the tension, up to when he shoots the gun and the action starts. And because it's a different tempo, I recorded separately. But when I planned it as a complete unified cue. Then we put it together in the editing and the dubbing. on one hand you hear the pulse of electronic instruments that were pre-recorded, and then the full orchestra. Sometimes you hear, there's a moment in which you hear the French horns starting to glissandos when the car starts spinning. And all this had to be organized as a composition, as a real composition. The scene seems to be chaotic, but the filmmaker and everybody who was involved in the scene, they had a very controlled situation. They knew what was going to be happening from one second to the other. In my case too, the music sounds like chaos. When you look at the score, the musicians didn't play just no matter what. They really had to play the written notes, and this was all very well organized and fixed. There was a French composer who said, "You have to fix the vertigo." Let me talk about sound effects for a moment. I've done several movies, or at least I remember two most distinctively. One of them was John Borman, another British director, who did a movie called Hell in the Pacific, with only two actors, Lee Marvin and Toshiro Mifune. And it was a very human interest story, although people think it's a war movie. There was a cicada in the jungle starting to do the singing, whatever you call it. And then I would, with two piccolos, with small flutes, in German, Flatterzunge, flutter, doing grrr, I made a dissonance in the same register of the cicada. So the audience didn't know where the sound effect end and the music starts. And that's the beginning of a cue. And I did a lot of things in that movie like that. And there's another movie I did called The Hellstrom Chronicle for David Wolper, and that was directed by Wallon Green. Unfortunately, the movie is not too known, but maybe this one of the scores that I reached out to the limits of what I could do, because I had to create a fictional world. So I invented the audio world of the insects, and then I had to invent a fiction upon another fiction, which was how to translate this imaginary audio world of the insects and translate it and bring it to human dimension. So I did it by combining sound effects and electronics. I had, for instance, in a given moment there is a battle of red ants against black ants, and I told the contractor of the orchestra to advise the members of the string section. There were a lot of strings, about 60 strings between violins, violas, cellos and basses, not to bring the best instruments, because during that battle I made them play with wire brushes of drummers. You know, one wire brush, each one of them, instead of playing with a bow, they play with a drummers, the jazz drummers, wire brushes. And it sounds like ants, you know. So they didn't need, these were the sound effects. And it pushed me to the limits, and I think after that I stopped doing movies for a while, because I didn't know how to be more imaginative, and there was nothing more challenging than that.
Problem. That's all I need is some foreign national getting his head blown off and turning this into an international incident.
No, I did other movies after The Handsome Chronicle, but it was difficult. It was difficult. I realized that the medium, I was tired of being insulated. The work of a composer is very lonely, and I needed to go and perform. I've been a performer before, and I like to appear in public, and I finally went and did it, conducting, playing the piano, and doing my own series of... I even doing a series called Jazz Meets the Symphony, which I did 4 records of them, and I'm playing not only jazz festivals, but I'm playing also classical music festivals, and I've been invited by... I play in subscription concerts at the Royal Festival Hall with the London Philharmonic. All this is bringing me a lot of joy, but I never can forget the movie Medium because it's fantastic. I was a film buff since I was a child. I sometimes B-movies, horror movies, have very good scores. In the times of black and white movies, I used to take my grandmother because nobody else in the family wanted to take me. But she was so patient with me, she would take me to see, and she didn't want to look. Dracula, Boris Karloff, and Frankenstein, all those movies that they were playing in those days. And I remember I was 5 years old, and I already established the whole theory of music for movies. I remember in a recess, I told my fellow students, my classmates, I told them, last night I went to see a movie, it was a horror movie, and I bet you anything that if that movie had not had any music, it wouldn't have been so frightening. And I discovered that by instinct. Nobody had told me in my house. My father was into classical music. He never even dared to interpret or analyze the function of music for movie. So that means that I already had an inclination for this medium. The one who discovered me in Argentina was Dizzy Gillespie, and he brought me to this country. As a matter of fact, I wouldn't be here had not been for him, maybe. He hired me and I became member of his band, pianist and also arranger. And I also worked with Ella Fitzgerald, with Sarah Vaughan, with Stan Getz. I did many recordings with all of them and all the great stars, John Coltrane. I did work with Miles Davis. And I keep working because the younger generation, I'm doing concerts together with Wynton Marsalis, John Faddis. Now I'm going to do I don't know if you heard about that tenor saxophone, young tenor, David Sanchez. He's going to appear with me in Germany the 18th of June of next year. I'm writing a piece in which he and John Faddis are going to be soloists. I just signed a contract with the WDR radio. They have a symphony orchestra and a jazz band, and I'm going to combine them together. So all my, I can, and not only, the contract is for 4 years, but not only to go conducting and performing, I have to write pieces for them. And I can write anything I want. So that is a dream. You know, movies are not only an art form, but they're an industry. And they are very expensive. So, the studios, they do test runnings, sneak previews, and they put a temporary track before the composer writes the real music, the original music for the film. So, it was very funny, actually, when we saw it with Enter the Dragons music. But then, Brett liked my team for this movie so much, that he suggested that I do an alternate version. So we recorded, actually, Enter the Dragon, and then I did a version of Rush Hour theme in the style of Enter the Dragon. This is why it has a little bit of feeling of the 70s, which is when Enter the Dragon was in 1973, exactly. So I did it purposely because it was and in the same tempo of Enter the Dragon. And we recorded both. And finally, obviously, the decision was that it was better to use this one. Specifically, I can say that in Enter the Dragon, I use, for instance, wah-wah guitars, which I think I use here too, in this particular cue, I'm saying, not in the movie. I try to avoid it, the style of the 70s. And analyzing the score of this movie, except for this cue, I don't think I have anything of the 70s. This is a completely new avant-garde kind of score in the action scenes, very polyrhythmical, polytonal, atonal. It has elements of 20th century music going into the 21st. So I wouldn't say that the theme of Mission Impossible, for instance, which is one of my most favorite one of my most famous one, famous ones. I would say that that is also completely different. And the theme, I did several themes in television, Mannix, totally different from Mission Impossible. They all have maybe in common this thing about the energy, the beat. The beat keeps changing according to the times, but there is an element of a pulse, energy, vigor, vitality, when it is needed, because as you could see, the theme of So Young is very tender. So I go with the movie. And I think my biggest satisfaction is that I found the sound of this particular movie, Rush Hour, which is an individual movie. Chris Tucker loses Jackie Chan, who escapes from his custody in front of the Chinese theater in Hollywood. And he, at the beginning of the cue, you feel the anxiety, Chris Tucker's anxiety. He knows that he must find him. And all of a sudden there's a red herring. He thinks that he found him, but there's another guy that is not Jackie Chan. So I had to build to that, to create that red herring. Then finally he sees him in the bath and starts running. It's almost a foot chase. I did it like a foot chase. And finally he jumps into the bath and puts the gun on Jackie Chan, and I put with the trombones an action there. So it builds naturally from anxiety to foot chase to the final statement with the trombones and timpani. This was one of the most difficult cues, because usually I try to avoid the cartoon technique, which is to follow frame by frame from the bus to a truck and getting out, finally getting a taxi. All these things I had to really follow one by one, and usually I don't do that, but in this case it was necessary. happening. I try to find a common denominator, at least for within the queue, for a whole section of the queue until it changes gears. And when it changes gears, I find another common denominator, and I compose around that common and if there is a third gear in the queue, I change, of course, there are pivotal points within the queue that you must change. But I don't like the cartoon technique in general. In this one, I had to do it. I remember when I did the music for Bullet, the director asked me to write the music for The Chase. And many people come to me and say, I love the music you wrote for The Chase in Bullet. There's no music in The Chase. I wrote 4 minutes prior to The Chase, a lot of tension when Steve McQueen is in his car, and through the rear view mirror he looks at the heavies, and they are in their car following very slow in the traffic. They are following him very, and they start playing games. Steve McQueen tries to go behind them, and finally it's a whole game. It lasts 4 minutes, and it's a tension that keeps building and building. But when he really makes the gear go fast and gets into a really fast gear, and the real chase starts, noises are also music, are part of the soundtrack. And you can make a whole orchestration of noises. Also, the car of Steve McQueen has a particular sound, and the car of the heavies has a particular sound. And sometimes the camera during the chase is in the hills of San Francisco, and you don't know what car is going to come. So if I have music all over the place, the audience are not going to distinguish one car from the other. So that's exactly what happened. I stopped abruptly, but there was a 4 minute cue before that. In this movie, I had to write music during the chases because they're so intricate, you know, there's so many elements, and it's not just a continuous chase. As you could see, there's comedy, there's a motorcycle, the jumping from one track to the another, from the bus to the track, from the track to the taxi. All these things I had to really catch, and that's why I said, in this case, I use more in the movie in general, I use more the so-called cartoon technique, going frame by frame, in many cues, which I don't do usually. Right before I did Rush Hour, I did a movie that I have to do the music first. In all my career writing for movies, it's the first time I have to do the music first. And it's the movie Tango, where I work with a director, Carlos Saura, and 3 choreographers. He tells the story through dance only. So in that case, I wrote the music first, and I could write more or less what I wanted. But I still have to follow the script. In that case, I did have to follow the script. I didn't follow the movie, but I followed the script. And then they showed the movie afterwards. The next cue, the way I organize the tension and the dialogue, basically, the violas are doing tremolo in the middle register. The violins in the high register, they are doing a ostinato, which is a repeated figure. And they are playing very near the bridge of the violin, and tremolato, which means they are agitating the bow on very close to the bridge. That creates a very tense sound already by itself. But on top of that, the notes they play, then the bass does a kind of syncopated figure. I'm trying to make the audience a little bit uneasy. That syncopated figure is not predictable, it's unpredictable. Thank you. and the ostinato starts to become more compressed rhythmically. There is a musical term to use by diminution of values. If I start, for instance, with whole notes, then the whole note becomes a half note, and the half note becomes a quarter note, and the quarter note becomes... This is a very old procedure in music. It comes from the times of the Middle Ages. But in this case, it did work.
Look, man, I know what you do, man. And the only reason why I ain't busted your ass is because you're my cousin. And you
I think that the mission of the composer is to subliminally put the audience in the frame of mind of what the filmmaker wants to say. I would compare movies to a magic show where the filmmaker is an illusionist. And obviously the rabbits and the handkerchiefs with different colors coming from all these things happen, and sometimes they put music. What the composer does as the contribution he makes in terms of composing original music for the film, but sometimes also he can give ideas to the filmmaker about, I give you a specific example, when they walk into the bar of the Afro-Americans, we knew that later on there's going to develop a fight between Jackie Chan and the people of the bar, the bartender and everybody in the bar, because he, without knowing, he insulted them. He doesn't know the jargon of the Afro-American community, and because of that he insults them. And a fight developed. But the fight is kind of funny. It's half comedy and half fight. We had the idea to use some kind of rhythm and blues song there, but how do you justify it? Where is the song? How can you do it? Or do you use a little bit of song and then you score the scene, but that would be too messy. And let's not forget that when they walk into that room, the back room, there's tension, that tension that I wrote with the strings. So my suggestion, which was finally used in the film, was that let's imagine there is a jukebox in the bar, but it's off screen, and we can pretend that the perspective of the jukebox could be anywhere, could be near the door, and as they are walking into the bar, you can take the license of getting a little bit, the music a little bit softer and softer, so when my music is going to start, when they close the door, you don't hear anymore. Of course, during the fight, the same music keeps playing, but now it plays very loud. It doesn't matter where it's coming from. See, the audience is accepting that. And this is a very important element of audiovisual counterpoint, because you have a fight, but you have R&B. This is really opposite to the cartoon technique, where the two voices, the audio and the visual, go parallel. In this case, one goes in one direction and the other goes in a different direction. And that's really counterpoint. I use the same chord in the Chinese theater when he loses Jackie Chan. It's the same, exactly the same chord in both cases. It's the chord of nothingness, of emptiness, of absence, of there is no presence. Then after that I got into the same melody that opens in the Hong Kong Harbor with a beat. This time I do it in a different way. It's the theme of Rush Hour. It's not really the theme of Jackie Chan. Thank you. In this queue, I basically five sections together, and one leads to the other. But during the section, I keep the same music or the same kind of music developing and composing around that until a pivotal point comes, as I said before. For instance, the beginning starts with a fight between him and the guards. So this section, it has an element of turmoil, and I never change going inside, going outside. But all of a sudden, when you see a big group of the FBI coming at him, now is the second gear. There is more dynamism in the music, more vigor, and there is change of timbres, a change of colors in the orchestra. I bring more orchestra, more elements. Then the third element, and it keeps going for a while. Then it cuts to him trying to sneak into the mansion. At this point, I'm using a combination of pre-recorded electronic sounds that have a kind of oriental flavor with another live instrument. One is called flapamba, which it has a sound very similar to marimba, but it's like a muted marimba. And I have the pre-recorded electronic sounds with a flapamba unison. And he's sneaking for a while, and that sound alone keeps the scene going, because you don't know what he's going to... And then, of course, with some strings and the harp, he goes into the tree, and now when he jumps into the mansion, and you see the FBI protecting the ambassador, or the consul, I mean, it's a new element, but I keep going with the same kind of music, because it's a new pivotal point. He really breaks into the mansion. And finally, it stays like that until the end, when they say, don't move. This scene is the phone call from Sang asking for ransom for the little girl. So I have his theme with the cellos and basses, very ominous. And on top of that, I have electronic instruments, very eerie. This time the strings are playing, instead of on the bridge, very far from the bridge, on the tailpiece of the violins, without vibrato and with mutes. So all the electronic effect and the violin playing so high, and that eerie sound, and a harp doing some dissonant notes, creates an element of menace. The theme this time is in the basses and the cellos. The music has an element of almost military. There is a pulse, sometimes by the snare drums or sometimes with the timpani, that keeps going and is a unifying element of this cue. And all the different things that happen build to the telephone call, the ring of the phone stops the music. Start building dissonance bases on Chinese scales. In this cue I use a lot the Chinese scales, and the first part up to the when Sang appears with the axe, all this is a section. It doesn't matter what they are doing and the alley or going up the fire stairs, it doesn't matter what they are doing. I'm not trying to catch anything. I'm just building based on that pulse and the Chinese scales dissonances. Then when he comes with the axe, the music becomes totally percussive, the percussion takes over. It's a very complicated section, this one, in terms of what I did, because I'm using, in a way, African rhythms. But not only the percussion, I mean, that would be too obvious. The percussion starts, but then the orchestra is doing the rhythms. Like the flutes and the woodwinds are doing one element of the rhythm. The French horns are doing another element of the rhythms. The trombones are doing another element. So, in Africa, they have a polyphony, which is, many people say that African music is primitive, but it's extremely complex and sophisticated. The only thing they did it all with duration of sound, instead of what we call pitch-class relationship. Pitch-class relationship, what we understand by melody and harmony. The melodies in Africa may not be too elaborated, but the rhythms are. And in this case, that second section of this cue is extremely, well, I would say sophisticated in the terms of the rhythmically, how the different sections of the orchestra are playing against each other. In the score paper, looks even more frightening than what you hear. There's another section that, believe it or not, after that incredible thing, the song became so dangerous, because he hears the voice of Chris Tucker, he runs away, and then when Chris Tucker comes, I start to build now based on a kind of more American pop-oriented rhythm, which in a way is simpler, much simpler. it has an element of rhythm and blues. But if I would do that only, I would take all the tension. So I start putting the drama of the music continues by putting, maybe it's because Chris Tucker was there unconsciously, I started with the rhythm and blues. But I knew I needed a new element. I couldn't stay in that African kind of, I say abstract African, because it's not really African music there. I know how I borrow from African rhythms, only I know it. Nobody can perceive it. But in the R&B, it's a little bit more obvious, because it's dun 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 dun. And I have a drummer doing that. So the piano comes there to just to, as part of that ground bass. It's a ground bass that keeps repeating. But the most important thing is not only that, how he plays in contrapoint what the figure of the horn, the horns and the brass. And finally, the last section is when they start falling. Again, I go into another kind of polyrhythms, which you could say that the Africans have been using, but again, you cannot perceive them because they're used by the whole orchestra until they fall. So this is basically how the construction of the cues are.
I don't like to play with stuff like that. I don't even know what it is.
You ain't never sold this to nobody, then?
How can I sell it to somebody when I don't even know what it is?
Maybe if you hold it a little close, you won't hold it?
I don't want to hold it.
Just touch it.
I don't want to touch
it. Why you don't want to touch it?
Because I don't want to touch it.
Just get at it.
You really think I'm stupid, don't you?
Stupid enough to get butt.
The next cue, these are actually two cues. One is the one in prison when we see the picture of So Young, and I bring her theme, the same theme that I, at the beginning of the movie, the tender theme, with a sort of flute. There's an instrument called electronic wind instrument. We call it, for abbreviation, EWI, because it's EWI, electronic wind instrument. And with that, we take a kind of Chinese bamboo flute. There's some Chinese cymbalums or kotos, but I thought that the harp would be more appropriate. And then the menace of the Shang theme underneath. And the next cue, it cuts to Chinatown. So you can interpret this cue two ways. It could be source music. We call source music music that comes from a source, like a radio or a live band or jukebox. Source music that is played somewhere there and the license of playing it loud. Or it could be underscoring. But basically what we are saying is, welcome to Chinatown. And the interesting thing is, it sounds like Chinese instruments, and I that use a lot of exotic instruments. In this case, I didn't. I really cheated. Doing ethnic music about ethnic anything ethnic, the best authorities are those who play those that kind of music. But there are no good sight readers in a studio where you have to go fast and you have to score a movie fast. For instance, Hungarian music, cymbalum players, they are very great virtuosos. If you go to a Hungarian restaurant and the violins, and they're playing incredible solo, but you bring them to a studio, they freeze. They cannot read, they cannot play with the studio musicians. So, in this case, I could have gone to UCLA, they have an ethnomusicology institute, and they have music from all over the world, all the civilizations, all the cultures, and they teach it there, and they have the instruments. But I had some experiences in the past where I finally decided to, what I said, cheat. I create, it's like a mirage, an audio mirage. You think that you are hearing a real Chinese orchestra, and it's the way the notes are written and what kind of instruments I'm, and I tell them to play a little bit out of tune. Not because the Chinese play out of tune, is that they play microtones, and they didn't temper the scale like Bach did. Johann Sebastian Bach finally made a convention in which the B flat, for instance, is the same note as the A sharp. In real life, that doesn't happen. So the Chinese, they perceive, like many other civilizations in the world, they perceive the microtones, the fractions of tone, quarter tones. So we call that out of tune. So I told the violin, there are two violins and one oboe, all play unison, because Chinese music is monophonic anyway. And by creating certain timbres of the regular orchestra, and writing the right kind of melody, it's finger cymbals, which the Chinese they use too, and some drums, we went by. This is very exposed. This cue is very exposed. It's not its source. I mean, it's really underscoring in a way. I wonder what the Chinese people are going to tell me. Once I had an experience, I did a movie, some scenes happened in Bolivia, and I used Inca music. And I didn't have any Inca instruments, and I imitated them. And all of a sudden, musicologists from South America came and said, how do you find these musicians here? And they were studio musicians. These are atmospheric Chinese source music. I didn't record it to picture. I didn't synchronize it with the picture. We recorded what we call it wild, without picture and overlong. Later on, the music editor, under the instructions of the director, tells him how to put the music. I knew that the softer one was for the restaurant. And then there were two for the streets. And actually, in the movie, they are not played so loud. But what we hear is the way we recorded them. They are, these ones, unlike the Welcome to Chinatown, that's played loud in the movie. Like almost like it would be a cue, underscoring. But these ones are played as part of the, combined with the walla walla of the crowds and the noises, the natural noises of the street. You hear it faint to give the atmosphere that you are in Chinatown. It would be wrong to play it like at this level. Not only because you need to hear the dialogue, but it would be absolutely bad filmmaking if they would play it in the movie at this level, too loud. Once I was doing a television movie, a movie of the week, and the producer who, and the director who hired me, both of them, for some reason, were fired while I was writing the score. And I think that they were the writers of the script who took over the whole post-production, including the music. So they didn't have experience, you cannot blame them, and that was the first time they were producing something in this medium. So there was a scene in which I wrote source music, a jukebox playing some kind of pop music like rock or something in a bar. And I recorded it in the level, talking about these cues that they were too loud now in the Chinese, in Chinatown, the atmosphere. You recorded them at the level of recording. I mean, you cannot record them soft. And then in the dubbing, they are being brought down. So I let the whole orchestra go and just kept a few musicians to play rock or whatever it was playing in the jukebox. And these new producers, they come and said, it's too loud. What do you mean it's too loud? Yeah, it covers the dialogue. And they were writers, they were protecting the dialogue. And I didn't know where they were coming from. I mean, what's your problem? It's too loud. Well, but in the dubbing, you bring it down. They never been in a dubbing session, so they didn't know what I was talking about. And you play also the perspective, you know, as they're going closer to the bar and the dialogue is going to start, maybe the jukebox is another place, so you can bring it down by playing the perspective. Oh, I had a big problem. Luckily, there was a line producer who said, no, Lalo is right. In the dubbing, we're going to bring it down. So that was the end. There are many, many ways, many techniques to work with this thing, but there's no way to record it soft. When Jackie Chan dresses as a waiter, at that moment I bring a variation of the same motif that when he was sneaking into the mansion. And then the fight, I wrote a very dramatic, a very conflictual fight, although there's some elements of comedy there visually, but I ignore them. And actually their lives are in danger, they are threatened. And then they have to escape, and a foot chase starts. But also I put on top of that the theme of So Young, because of the pendant on that waitress, and finally I end up with a variation also of the theme of the main title. All these superimposes, juxtaposed, interpolated, is a very complex cue.
ain't gonna chop the goddamn bag. Huh? Then you threw the gun out the window. Come on, this way. Chop.
Here, believe it or not, is the theme of the main title, the theme of Rush Hour, played slow by a trumpet, very few strings, and a timpani pounding. Our heroes are defeated. This is the defeat of the Rush Hour team. My inspiration comes from the screen, and obviously the situation and the characters are so interwoven that I cannot tell who inspires me more. I think it's organic. It's an organic total. Brett Ratner said that the sadness of the last cue of Dirty Harry was so simple that if I could do something like that, so I did it, but with the theme of Soo Young on top. And it's the sadness of Jackie Chan, who is defeated. He knows that now Soo Young is in extreme danger. That's why her team is there. And as a matter of fact, he's defeated. I mean, he has to go back to China defeated.
Compound.
Excuse me, Consul, you have a guest.
Jack, let me get back. Do you mind?
Thomas.
There's even a harpsichord hidden there. Maybe because he's English. It's the same cue that we are playing the song's ominous theme until we see Jun Tao. And that was the motive, the same motive. Alfred Hitchcock said that a good thriller is the one that has a very menacing villain. And unconsciously, maybe I find better themes for my villains. It's not better, but more identifiable. For instance, Scorpio in Dirty Harry, who was a bad guy, for him I had a very identifiable game, and it was with a human voice, a female voice, and electronic instruments, eerie, and my conception was that he was hearing voices, he was crazy. And the villain needs help musically in order to make, well, it's also a way to manipulate the audience and say, this is dangerous. So this leitmotif keeps coming back two or three times. It will come back again because there are more phone calls, I think. in the 19th century and before, in the 18th century, there was no movie. There were no movies. And the only form of entertainment that the public had, in which audiovisual elements were combined, and drama, or comedy, because there were comic operas too, that was the opera. People went to the opera to see something in the stage, theatrical, that had music, obviously, and it had elements of colors, the costumes, and sometimes ballet interpolated into the opera. My father, by being concertmaster of the Buenos Aires Philharmonic, they had a season of opera they had to play in the pit, and I went to see a lot of opera, and that's another source of inspiration, where the drama. I remember, for instance, I was very, very small when they took me to see Lucia de Lammermoor of Donizetti, and when Lucia comes in the mad scene with a knife, I was terrified and I had nightmares, and I was a premonition of Fatal Attraction and Play Misty for me. You know? I mean, it's nothing more terrifying than to see a woman coming at you with a knife. This is the beginning of the last act of the movie. And it's a different tempo and different feeling. It has an element of drama, but it's exactly the same music. I mean, it's a variation of the same music with different orchestration, but it's the theme of Rush Hour done in a dramatic way with a pulse, with a timpani that promises that now we are about to start the third act. And in that sense, when I said that the main title music was an overture, and this is a reprise of the last act, we are making a parallel to opera. Young filmmakers, they say that I have a signature. I don't see it, because to me, the music, for instance, of Enter the Dragon is totally different, almost at the same time, or a few months before that, I did Dirty Harry, which was with Clint Eastwood. I think it's a totally different sound. Before that, I did Bullet, also totally different. Maybe it has more elements of jazz, but that's not my signature, because it kept changing according to the times.
...of my country, priceless pieces of Chinese culture, if anything gets damaged.
Don't worry about it, ain't nothing going to happen to none of this stuff.
And now, we can pass them on.
The only moment in which Lalo Schifrin goes back to his own, bag of tricks is when there is a confrontation after Juntao kills the head of the FBI operation in this case, and I mean when Sang kills him, and Chris Tucker comes, and there is a confrontation between, it's like a western, I mean the two of them are with the guns and they're facing each other, and instead of doing it like a western, like High Noon for instance, I'm bringing an electric bass, doing a little bit of a... It's a very short section of this long cue, but I noticed that it was refreshing. Dun, 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 dun. And I built the tension on top of that, But because maybe the way Chris Tucker walks toward him or whatever, that inspired me to change completely the style of the cue. Otherwise, it's totally symphonic, and this cue is longer than some poèmes symphoniques.
Something you want?
HQ is the denouement of the film. The French horn supported by the trombones, I think they do a very noble theme. Jackie Chan sees Tam So Young, she's okay, and now the theme of her comes in. You realize that this is good filmmaking. At the very end, all this tension going, the cuts, like June Tower is about to fall and all that, it's almost like a Hitchcock film. I mean, the kind of tension that creates. I think that Brett is a fantastic filmmaker, and this is a comedy. It's supposed to be a comedy, but look at that scene. It's not comedy at all. You are like. And I enjoy to put music that made a contribution to this kind of movie.
Take that badge and shove it up your ass. All up in your ass. I'm LAPD.
It's funny that I embrace the two art forms of the 20th century. Film, music, and jazz. I needed to discover my own voice because my father was an authority. He also had a master class at the National Conservatory of Music of Argentina. So when we were going to the street, he was Maestro Schifrin. I never thought that I could overcome that. Maybe that was, or maybe it's because jazz touched me, modern American jazz touched me directly. Maybe it's nothing Freudian about it. It's jazz that I liked it. I felt that the music of Thelonious Monk, Dizzy Gillespie, and Miles Davis, Oscar Peterson, Bud Powell, they did something to me, and I changed completely after that. And perhaps that influenced many years later my writing for movies, because there's always a jazz element. I've been a great admirer always of Duke Ellington, and I met him. I mean, once we did a tour, the two big bands, Dizzy Gillespie's band and Duke's band, and sometimes Dizzy was opening the show and he was closing after intermission, or vice versa, in the Middle West, in the colleges, in Iowa, you know. And I remember he always invited Dizzy and me to have caviar and champagne in his dressing room. He was a Duke. He acted like a Duke. That's why they called him Duke. And the catalog of songs that he wrote, he could have been in Broadway as successful as Cole Porter or George Gershwin or Irving Berlin or Richard Rodgers, but he never wrote for Broadway because I don't think he wanted to be at the service of choreographers or the service of a story. He didn't want to tell a story. The story was a song. That's it. Or the team, or the instrumental team he wrote. So Frank Sinatra hired him to write the score for a movie that Frank Sinatra was, he acted and produced. It was Assault on a Queen. And I went to the recording session. And it was like a recording for a record. I mean, it had nothing to do with the movie. You see all these big conflicts, and it's in the sea, it's like the Titanic, pirates coming, or whatever, all that happened in the ocean, and so they had to hire two orchestrators to use Duke's melodies and themes and reorchestrate and re-score the movie. And that had to be done, because it didn't work. I mean, and it was great music. It was great music, but it was not for the movie. This is happened during the studio system, before I came to Hollywood. John Green, the composer of Body and Soul, was the head of music department of MGM. And in the same music department was Miklos Rozsa, who, by the way, I forgot to mention before as one of my favorite composers, like Sahara and Ben-Hur, great scores. And there was a movie that MGM had to do. It was called Green Mansions. It was something about the jungles of Brazil. So they thought that the best composer would be Heitor Villa-Lobos, the foremost Brazilian classical composer at that time, and he's still known. I mean, Villa-Lobos is an institution. So they call him to Rio de Janeiro and they say, "Would you like to do this movie?" "Well, send me the script." So when he read the script, he liked it and he said, "Yeah, I'll do the score. I'll do the score." And they needed something, the exotism of the Brazilian jungles and the Brazilian feeling. So they went and they shot the movie, and 1 year later, now finally, they had to bring Villa-Lobos to come and see the movie and score it, and write it, and score it. And he comes from the airplane with a big package. His luggage was in the luggage, you know, but he wouldn't let go of that package. There was a whole group of Hollywood composers who were in awe with Villa-Lobos, and they went to make the reception at the airport. And they said, "Well, now we're going to take you to the hotel, and tomorrow, if you feel like it, we take you to MGM to see the movie. And by the way, what do you have in that package?" "I have the score." "What do you mean you have the score?" "Yeah, I have the score of the movie." "Wait, the movie just has been put together right now. What do you mean you have the score?" "Well, he did write a score to the script, and the music that he wrote was longer than the movie, and it didn't fit the movie, obviously. So they had to hire again two other people to re-score it." They never used really the score he wrote. The score was exhibited in MGM in the music department like a document of a museum. And that shows that some composers are not meant to write music for movies, no matter how great they are, because it's a special art form, it's a special craft, if you want to call it, it's a special inclination. You have to have a feeling for the audiovisual counterpoint and drama, and underscore that drama, and know when you have to lay off or be very subtle, or sometimes you don't have to be subtle, sometimes you have to come forward. And all these things are, now they're teaching in schools, but in the old days they didn't teach it, and we learn it by instinct and by learning from other scores or by looking at movies. So I think that's it. I mean, that sums up what my ideas about film composing is. Well, thank you very much for listening. I really hope you like the score, and especially the movie Rush Hour. I wish the best to all of you, and let's